Political Watch with Graeme Richardson.
Good afternoon, Mr. Richardson. How are you?
Very well indeed, thanks, Fred. I'm feeling chipper.
Chipper. That's a good word, isn't it? Chipper.
It is indeed. A bit pommy, but still.
Do you like words? You would like words. You're a bit of a wordsmith.
I love it. I love watching Kel Richards. He's very good on that.
Yes, isn't he? Because you would do, I imagine, over the years, you've done a tremendous amount of reading.
A lot of reading, a lot of writing.
You devour the papers every day?
Yep.
Do you have a favourite word?
Yes, but we're not going to have it here.
I think I might know what the word is.
Yeah.
Has it got four letters in it?
It does indeed.
It does.
You're a clever man.
Do you know my sister-in-law or ex-sister-in-law, she's a great girl, she said once of that word, she said, there are certain times in one's life where the way you feel, the only word that you can use to describe the way you feel about the thing or the person or whatever is that one word.
Indeed. She's dead right.
Oh, dear. All right, let's talk what happened in the news this week. I see we started the week with the Federal Opposition Health Spokeswoman and former Social Services Minister Anne Rustin. She was on telly, and it seems as though any opportunity that they stick it into the government. She said they had to be dragged to the table kicking and screaming to extend the COVID pandemic disaster payments. Anthony Albanese, over the weekend, it was announced that, yes, they've agreed, I think it was last Friday, in fact, late last Friday, they agreed to make those $450 and $750 payments. Do you think they were dragged? What did she say? Dragged to the table kicking and screaming, Graham?
That's just nonsense. That's just nonsense. Obviously, You constantly review these things. You don't just have formal reviews. The reality is you're looking at these things all the time, and so you know when it's time to act. Anthony and his team worked it out, and off they went.
Well, it was timely because if you look at the New South Wales COVID infections today, have you seen the figures for COVID today?
No, I haven't.
In New South Wales, are you ready, Richo?
Yeah.
24-hour period in New South Wales, 18,669.
Wow.
Yeah, I was
that's
one too.
That's scary.
Yesterday, it was 13,829. In a 24-hour period, there's an increase of nearly 5,000 cases.
Yeah, it's really scary. It's an increase of more than 30%.
Well, do you know that yesterday, across Australia, in all states and territories, in the 24-hour period, there was 89 deaths and there was 55,602 official cases of COVID-19?
Yeah, this just seems to be getting worse, doesn't it?
It does,
again?
Doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like there's another wave.
There sure is. New South Wales Premier Dominic Perrottet is introducing sweeping new laws around lobbying after an investigation found there was a serious risk of corruption. It was secret meetings between lobbyists and public officials continued. The State Cabinet this week agreed to introduce new legislation to tighten rules around lobbying after an ICAC investigation found the laws in New South Wales were deficient. Richo, lobbying. Tell us what lobbying is.
Well, I'm an occasional lobbyist.
I thought you might have been, yes.
What it means is that you go and see, it might be a minister, it might be a public servant, depending upon the situation, and you attempt to convince them of a certain way to go. It's that simple. It's not devious. It's not terrible. You're not walking in with a brown paper bag and saying, "Here, mate, here's $100,000. This is the decision we want." There's none of that. You just walk in and you try and have a better argument than those who don't agree with you.
So, do you think that these new rules, introduction of new legislation to tighten the rules around lobbying, was needed?
No, I don't, but I'm not opposed to them. If that's what they want to do, then they can go and do it. There's always this this suspicion that something terribly corrupt is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you look at this country and you look at the record of state and federal governments, while you can't say we're corruption-free, we are very close to it, very close to it. This country is just not a corrupt place. I think most ministers would be shocked if someone came in and said, you know, here's the paper bag, mate.
Yeah.
They just won't cop it here. I think it's a really good thing. And, you know, there's only ever been a couple of pollies pinged for it because It just doesn't happen. I mean, you know, ICAC was set up to get all sorts of politicians. It's finished up getting people who are driving instructors and stuff. It's just never delivered on the hype. And that's because they hyped it up too much. They hyped up the corruption body and they hyped up the amount of corruption.
Well, there's two stories with ICAC this week. Firstly, the former New South Wales Labor ministers, Obeid, Tripodi, Kelly, have been hit with criminal charges following on from the ICAC investigation that found a deceptive cabinet submission was made to help an Obeid-related company secure a multi-million dollar public-private partnership. There was four of them. All four men have now been charged with misconduct in public office. The office of the DPP confirmed that earlier this week. Obeid is actually back in jail now. It's not looking good for Tripodi and Kelly and the others.
Well, it's never very pleasant to have a criminal charge slapped on you. It would be no doubt a big shock to them and their families. I know these blokes. I can't imagine them being corrupt. I really can't. For all the talk about Tripodi, his main crime was being Obeid's best mate.
Yeah, right.
They've never actually found anything on him, so I'll be fascinated to see how this goes. But I know these blokes, and I'd be very surprised if they got found guilty. I really would.
What about John Sidoti this week with the finding of ICAC? Is this an overreach of ICAC? I mean, are both of these matters, in your opinion, an overreach of ICAC again?
Well, I think, ICAC's always got that tendency.
Right.
I think it's a beast that wants to keep growing. And the only way you can keep growing is to find more problems. I've never been a fan of ICAC. I've always got confidence in our police force. If there's something crook going on, I'll back the police to find it. I'm not sure if ICAC are tracking an elephant through snow. But you look at the number of times they've missed. They find misconduct. They make some terrible finding about somebody, but they can't actually get a jury to convict them.
Yeah. And in the meantime, good people with reputations are just ruined.
Exactly. I mean, it's a shocking thing. I'm a friend of a couple of people who, and we always call ourselves those who've been bashed up by ICAC, there's Margaret Kinnean, who of course is very well known lawyer, barrister, who was knocked around terribly by them, but survived and just kept fighting on. And there's Mike Gallagher, the former Liberal leader in the upper house. He's a very good friend of mine. He's a terrific bloke. The idea of him being corrupt is so absurd. It really irritates me when I hear things like that. But they went after him, and they of course, in the end, they concede they had nothing. But the trouble is, the fact that they're going after you and the fact that that gets on a front page means your reputation suffers terribly.
Absolutely, because perception becomes truth.
Yeah, it always has.
Yeah.
And if you read enough headlines about, Boltitude's being investigated for criminal behaviour,
mm-hmm.
Then you'll find that a lot of your friends walk away because there's just this assumption of guilt.
You bet. And once you're found not to be guilty, ICAC don't come out and apologise.
ICAC's very, very slack on the apology market, very slack indeed. But they don't mind chasing people. There's a terrible case of them writing to the paper in Leeton, because one bloke had moved down there, and they didn't want to let him, just try and start again. They just wanted to make sure they could bash him up wherever he was.
Right.
I think ICAC's been a disgrace from the day it started, and the only good time that we'll know about ICAC is when someone has the guts to close it down.
Australia suffered catastrophic—that's the word they use—losses of wildlife and habitat, according to the official 5-year scorecard on the state of the environment. It was released earlier this week. And leading scientists are pleading now with the Albanese government to urgently ramp up protections to halt the escalating rate of the extinction. Look, it was a subject of the press conference presentation by Tanya Plibersek this week at the National Press Club. She accused the LNP of hiding the report since December. It really does look like that's what they did, because they knew it didn't read well and they didn't want it to come out prior to the election.
Prior to an election, exactly. It irritates me that people do that. I mean, there's no reason when the government has received a report, unless, of course, it's something to do with national security or something that you can't release, but on the assumption that it's just a policy discussion, there's nothing that should be kept. There's no reason why governments can't release reports on any policy at all except for security.
Yeah, true. We touched on COVID at the start. The mask mandate, or the lack of mask mandate, with the numbers that I gave you for the last 2 days and the numbers that we've had across the week, last week, do you think it's got to the stage where, you know, the government really should look at, or this, I suppose, you know, is it the government puts pressure on the states because the states make the laws or the regulations, the legislation? Should we be looking at mask mandates again?
Look, I hate to say it, but the answer is probably yes. I think the figures are alarming enough for me to say yes, we should be.
Yeah. Why do you think? Let me ask you this, and probably you know this is the cynical side coming out. Do you think it's because Dan Andrews won't put in? I saw Dan Andrews on TV the other night, and he said you know the mask mandates will never be introduced again. And I thought, I wonder, is that because there's an election in Victoria in November? And in New South Wales, there's an election in New South Wales in March of next year. And both politicians know that people don't want to have these mandates introduced. So they don't have the, you know, what's to do it.
Yeah, well, I think it's really a case with this of governments just waking up to the fact that you can't mandate things that the public are just not going to wear. The reality is that an awful lot of people are going to ignore these mandates. And you've seen it yourself while I've been on. Did you see everyone wearing a mask?
No, you don't.
You see plenty of people committing a terrible crime because they're breaking the law. But obviously there's a good reason for it, and that is that If you're not a sick person, there's no particular reason why you have to wear them. I'm really annoyed by all of that, but anyway, it's the way of the world.
Politicians are continuing to trade barbs. This is politicians from both sides continuing to trade barbs over the PM's preparedness for foot and mouth disease. They say the detection of even a single case of live foot and mouth virus in Australia would trigger a COVID-like response, including contact tracing, lockdowns, interstate border closures, so on and so forth.
Oh, it'd be massive.
Do you think it has got to the stage where we need to close borders at the moment with flights from Indonesia?
Not yet.
Right.
But we're not that far away from it if trends continue the way they are. It's an alarming trend.
I'll let you go. Thank you, as always, for taking the time to talk to us. We'll catch up with you next Friday.
Yeah, sorry, I've got to do that, mate.
That's okay, mate. Talk to you soon. Okay. Bye-bye. That's Graeme Richardson.